Raised Rowdy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name's Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nicky T.
Nick, introduce our handsome guest here.
Our special guest this week, Mr. Brett Shiroki.
Cheers, you doing, brother.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me, man.
Bro, thank you, man. I love the album, and when you were like last night, you were like, are you going to listen to the album? Are you going to have time? I'm like, absolutely, bro.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I was like, I can't. I mean, no, it's pretty par for the course that I forgot to do something.
No, it happens. I stayed up until 4 a.m. listening to your record.
Oh, my gosh.
I listened to it a bunch.
Oh, you listened to it more than once?
A bunch.
There's 15 songs on there.
Yeah.
Dang, dude.
It's great, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Got home from the bar, probably played an hour of Fortnite. And then started listening to the record, and I didn't go to sleep. I just kept listening to it.
It disturbed you that much.
Yeah. Definitely not that. But before we get into the record, why don't we talk a little bit about you? Like, you're...
Yeah, I went on your website. I'm like, okay, I think we've met at, you know, Nick's Rounds or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, let me just learn more about this before we dive in here. And then I went on your website. There's not, like, a bio or anything. At least, not that I found.
It might have been taken off. I don't know. I moved. I mean, let's see. How deep do we want to get, guys?
As deep as it is, still interesting.
Well.
Okay. Well, then.
Why don't I talk about when we met?
Okay.
And then we'll go maybe back further than that.
Okay.
So, I remember getting an email from you in regards to some of your music that you're starting to release.
Mm-hmm.
Friendship was one of the ones I remember extremely well.
Yeah.
First of all, I love funny songs, but second of all, the cleverness in your lyrics, right? I think of a lot of people in town are clever with lyrics. I think you're one of my favorite people in terms of that.
Oh, wow.
Nice. In terms of like you turning a hook around or like... I don't know. It just seems like you're really crafting when you're writing.
Oh, that means a lot, man. Thank you for that.
So, I mean, even that song, which is like, you know, talks about being alone with your dinghy. I saw that.
It's a boat.
Yeah. But like, I saw the thing in it that makes songs great. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. That's awesome. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
And been a fan ever since, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
The friendship.
Yeah.
I forget about that song, honestly.
Dude, that was a fun song, though. I loved it.
It was fun to go through on your website, like, all the album photos and promo pics that are up there, like, all the streaming links, and see all the different looks of Brett.
Yeah. It's been a work in progress. I feel like we were talking today. I was writing with a couple guys, and Ward Davis and Brent Rupert, you guys, you know them.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
One of them said, like, I think I'm becoming more of a hippie as I get older, which feels backwards, but I'm like, yeah, same. I don't know. You just get more comfortable, I guess. I don't know. And stop trying to fit into yourself into whatever also mold, I guess, you know, you think you have to, and you just, like, embrace. It's just whatever.
I feel like that's sort of one of the themes of the record.
Yeah.
It's sort of like eschewing music row or just kind of giving the finger to TikTok and labels and stuff like that. Or whatever.
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah, I know. We'll see how that goes over. my publisher was like, do you want to play this? They're like, do you want to play this for some labels? And I was like, do I? I don't know. I was like, do you want me to sit in a meeting and be like, this song's about you? You know? I don't know.
Here's what I'll say about that. One of my favorite bands of all time is Rage Against the Machine.
Mm.
They're literally raging against the machine that they were in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, great art's great art.
Yeah.
That at the end of the day, they understand that.
Yeah, I think
so.
I think, yeah. And if it does well, that's really...
Yeah.
I mean, that's what matters to, you know, to them, I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's freeing. It's really... So the record is called Rock, Paper, Scissors. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you saw... I probably don't have it listed yet because it's not out yet. But... the whole story behind that is just like, again, the mold thing. They're kind of like, you need to pick a lane. And like, I moved here to be a songwriter. And so, like, your job is to be like a chameleon and try to fit in as many different things as possible, you know?
Yeah.
And my songwriting is definitely like the biggest part of my artistry. And I've never, like, my favorite band of all time is Zeppelin. And I think they just did like, they did different things, but made it their own so well, you know?
Yeah.
And I just respect and admire artists and bands like that, and I've just never wanted to be a pick a lane kind of person. And so they've been like, you can be the rock guy, you can be the commercial country guy, you could be the sad songwriter guy, but you can't be all of that. Like, you need, and yeah. So rock is, there's five, so the first five songs are rock leaning.
Yeah.
The next five songs are the more commercial, look good on paper.
Yeah.
And then the last five are the song, the sad songwriter cut you. Scissors. Yeah. Okay, songs.
So I think that's, we were kind of talking about that beforehand. You yeah. know, we were talking about the record, and Nick's like, the last half of the record is just like,
yeah, once you hit the turn at song yeah. 10, you're like,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is yeah. this yeah. is the stuff that is sometimes hard to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But is yeah. oftentimes the most meaningful for the listener.
Oh, yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, the songs, someone once said to me that, like, they're like, good songwriters can write their song, their story well, but great songwriters will write other people's stories really well. And yeah. I just, you know, I've always thought about that. And, like, I want to be great at this. And so,
yeah.
And also, my life's too boring to write about myself too much, you know?
It's that's kinda, how I feel about my life. I'm like, what am I going to write about?
Yeah.
Whatever, Kurt. Yeah. You were over in New Zealand for a month.
Okay. I'm over in New Zealand. I'm playing lots of shows.
For a month.
For a month.
No. But I remember talking to you in the past and you talking about that, how oftentimes you're writing to a character, or you're writing not necessarily about yourself.
Right.
But more so about a story.
Yeah.
Is that the majority of this record? Is it a mix? Is...
I'd say there's a couple songs on there that are very personal. There's a song called Killing It, and then there's a song called Sold Out Show, which are kind of zoned in about like this life of being an artist and
yeah.
and the business and
the
all
two
that.
Bookends
and,
of it.
Yep, they yep. are on purpose. Yep. And yeah, those are very personal. But otherwise, they're just trying to embody a story that, you know, like trying to put yourself in someone's shoes that you maybe never been there before, and
yeah,
and try to tell that as honestly. And I think the songwriters I look up to, I just think they do like a really good job of, I mean, you're kind of like all songwriters are artists, I think, you know, some of them just can't sing, you know,
yeah.
But your job is kind of just to chase these, to take these rabbit holes down and see how far they go in the emotions of life, and just like kind of torture yourself in a way of like, I'm trying to like feel that to the deepest level I can to get there. To tell this story for the people who really need to hear it, you know? And
yeah.
I don't know. That's the way I try to approach these things.
Yeah.
I take it very seriously, probably too seriously, but my friends will say like, you're very romantic about like music, and I am, you know, it means a lot to me.
Well, I think you can tell that. One of the things I notice about your music is there's lines almost every song that I listen to that I'm like, wait, what was that line? And I go back and listen to it again, or I like write it down so I can look at it. You know what I mean?
Oh, cool.
And I mean, we used to play your song on the radio for good years.
Yeah.
Like, we played that on the radio on Raise Rowdy Radio.
What year was that?
When it came out.
It was like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
4 good years ago.
Yeah. But because it's meaningful, and like even silly lines that are just memorable, I think your songs have more than a normal song.
Oh, cool.
Like what is it, Girls in Cars Like That Are Born to Run?
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean. I'm like,
yeah, man.
Damn. Yep.
Yep.
So I think the record starts off hitting in the chest. It kind of is like a proclamation of like, here's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's what it felt personal. That's why I asked that, because I know we had conversations previously where you're like, I'm kind of like writing stories.
Mm-hmm.
That felt personal.
It was. So yeah, that one definitely is.
Definitely makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. And that's probably a song where you're like, who would cut this except me? But maybe someone would, you know?
For sure.
And then other times too, like I almost like hear, I remember listening to your songs and being like, man, it would be great if this person cut this song, right? As a songwriter,
right,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? You're like thinking that way.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely heard some of that on this record too in my head. Like, I'm like, man, I could hear like Brothers Osborne cutting this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or like I could hear like a little bit of like Eric Church in this. Seeger, you have some Seeger in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a, and then other stuff that's more like straight down the center, like Chicken or Chickens.
Yeah.
Bro, like. First of all,
Alan Jackson or something.
Yeah. Any Zach Top, Cole Goodwin, like any of those guys. Or like he had a good point. He was like Zach Brown. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like it's that's in that lane too. But it's familiar enough where you hear it and sonically you're like, yeah.
Right.
A little bit of Brad Paisley I hear on this record.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, yeah. My girlfriend and I were listening to this record and she's like, I could hear a little Brad Paisley in there.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all.
Which I love. I think.
Yeah.
I heard Paisley as well.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. There's all kinds of good shit on this record, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a really cool record. And honestly, when I listened to it, I noticed the kind of at, you know, song 10, song 11, I'm like, okay, this is changing.
Yeah.
I did notice that it was more rocking, but I didn't see like the hard break between like, you know, which mm-hmm. songs there.
Yeah.
As much, just because I think sonically those two maybe fit a little bit closer to each other maybe. But mm-hmm. man, when you hit the heartstrings, you really know how to do it.
That's my sadness. That's sadness, as my buddy Joseph says. Sad. Sadness yeah. is my superpower.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the song that I think is the most powerful for me, the one that I heard and my heart dropped, it's Bring You Home.
Yeah.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah.
What a just a... I told Nick it's heavy like a neutron star or something.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, but... So beautifully crafted too.
Thanks, man. Yeah. When we wrote that one, I it's just one of those. It's like, this is not my story, but it's a lot of people's story.
Of course.
A few years ago, I just did like a, you know, an Instagram video of me playing it or whatever. And the response was just like nuts. And then like, people we know that like in town that I've never met that are just like, this is incredible. And it's like, oh, it kind of was like a, okay, but then it was like the people of like, I just had a miscarriage and like all these people, they want to tell that story, they want someone, and then like, and then thanking me for like putting that to a song. And you know, you sometimes you forget, it's like songs aren't, I don't know, especially in this town, and I'm not trying to be shady or anything, but I feel like so much of country music now is just like escapism, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's 90 minutes of beer in the air, like that's all. And it's like, man, no, that you're missing so much of it. Like, it's a lot of it's supposed to be healing and supposed to be help you navigate life that is hard and those things. And I just don't want to lose sight of that, you know. And songs like that, I just, it wasn't for me. It's, you know, so hopefully it just finds people.
Well, I have no relation to a story similar to that, right?
Right.
Personally. But it touched me the first time I heard it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I have friends that have gone through that. And it's same. Just like, that's for me, that's like the song that sticks out the most as being just like a 10 out of a 10, you know, on the record.
Well, and production.
Yeah. It's like the toy piano in the first chorus, and then it switches the strings and everything. And I was just like, God, that piano that's sound.
Woo. Yeah, that took some time.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. I had to work at that, because I couldn't, I go off of like, do I believe it yet? You know, that's just like my barometer. Like, some of these songs took weeks of just, nope, I don't believe it. When you're producing a record, it's kind of, to me, producing it, which I produce this record myself, it's kind of like writing the song a second time, you know, in a way. Because it can be a completely different song by the time you're done with it in the studio, you know.
Yeah.
And so my barometer was just like, do I believe this yet? Does it really trigger something in me? And I've listened to these songs hundreds of times already. Like, it's probably harder, but with that one, it was like, no, that piano's not right. What about toy piano? No. What about like a music box sounding kind of thing? It was just like a whole bunch of like, I scrapped so many things with that. And then I had to. That was the first time I wrote string parts and had to do that, but it's like I needs it, like I felt like it needs it, so I got to learn how to do this, and like did that. And yeah, I don't know, it was one of those things. And then how that song ends was just kind of like the work tape kind of sound, where it's just me in a room, you know. And like I had done, my buddy that mixes it, Caleb, he's like, did you, because I get choked up at the end of it, and he's like, did you do that on purpose? I was like, bro, it took me so many takes to sing this song, because I would just start crying. Mm-hmm. And I was like, at a certain point, I was like, I just, that's real. Like, I just, that needs to be in there. Yeah. And so I was a little worried about that coming off as like sounding forced or cheesy or something like that. But I was, at the same time, I was like, no, that's what it's supposed to be. So
it's emotion. And that song is a ball of emotion.
Yeah.
And you hear the title and you don't think it's going to be what it is.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's part of the power.
Yeah.
You hear that title, you think you know what it is, or you think you might have an idea what it is. Mm-hmm. I did not have any idea of what I was going to get until you got into the meat of the song, which I think is sick.
That's awesome.
In my head, that's like Isbell kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And for me, that's one of my favorite songwriters.
Yeah.
Like an elephant or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like an elephant's about, you know, cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how many people does that song done Touch. Something for, yeah, you know?
It's so like, many.
I think a lot of times we forget, like, people just don't want to feel, I mean, they just want to feel alone, you know?
Yeah.
And it's easy to feel alone in life. And just to know that, like, someone's out there narrating this and that. I mean, at the end of the day, like when you're playing a concert, like why would 40,000 people pay money to come stand cramped next to each other for one thing? Like it's music is so powerful. Like it connects us in that way that I don't know anything else that really does. I guess you could argue sports kind of does, but it's not the same thing.
I talk to Matt about this all the time. I'm like, music brings us together.
Yeah.
Sports divides us.
That's kind of true. Yeah.
Yep. You're dividing a fan base of NFL football into 32 separate groups.
Yeah.
And there's hatred between some of those groups. That's some true. You're just like,
fuck the Jets.
I don't mind. But you know what I mean? Like, I used to be, and I'm still a big sports fan. I just don't let it affect my life. I used to let it affect my life.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. It's like, why are you in such bad shape today? My favorite group of 19-year-olds lost the game they were playing. It's like, are you serious? You know? Yeah. It's kind of...
It's wild.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that, like, when I think back on my life and I think back on music.
Yeah.
What it's meant to me from the time I was a kid, from the first time that the hairs stood up on the back of my neck when I'm listening to a song that my dad hadn't playing.
Yeah.
To the moment that I heard your song for the first time.
Yeah.
That emotion, that feeling, that moment in a room when you shut everyone up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that I search for.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah. Well said.
That's the thing that music has that nothing else has for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I think a lot of people would agree.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know that they don't know, but they, you know, it's like I was talking about this today. It's like, the Bluebird, I get to play the Bluebird like maybe 6-7 times a year, and it's my favorite place to play, even though it's like small or whatever, but it's just so, it's got magic to it. And and I feel like if there was one conversation that I could say I've had in at the Bluebird, at least 98% of the times I've played there, it's people saying like, we didn't even know this was a thing. Like, we thought Broadway and all that stuff was Nashville and country music. Like, we didn't even know you could go watch songwriters like play the songs they've written and like tell the stories behind. We're like, this is incredible. Like, this is what I want to do again. And they still know, you know, but that's the power of a song.
It is. And like, God bless the Bluebird for having a big enough platform where it can make that be known, you know, like, and I credit the show Nashville a lot for that. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, for me too, like watching that show, I'm like, oh man. And the songs in that show were great. Because they were going to all these hit songwriters and they were cutting their songs that hadn't been cut, you know?
Yeah.
But that's like the listening room, you know, the Bluebird.
Mm-hmm.
And ours is a little different.
Nick's writing writer's rounds.
Well, ours are a little different, right? Those are listening rooms. Mm-hmm. The Bluebird's a listening room. You're paying attention. If you're not, someone's going to yell at you.
Yeah, you're out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the start of my rounds, I explain what a writer's round is.
Yeah.
Because at this point on Sundays, there's a lot of people that don't know.
Right.
And then I say, hey, these people have spent countless hours and a lot of their brain power crafting these songs exactly how they want them. If you could be quiet and keep conversations to a minimum, that would make it so that you're showing that you're enjoying this.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't always work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Because we hosted a rowdy bar.
Right.
And we have the whole time, you know, it is rowdy on the row, but, man, when those moments happen where someone takes the room and just captures it and you make a loud honky tonk, pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's so powerful.
Special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you do it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this album, I think, is full of moments. It's full of quotable lines. I wrote some of them down. Like,
look at you, dude. This is awesome.
Do you move on fast or do I catch on slow?
Yeah.
That's great.
Bro, yeah. That line's amazing. Yeah, awesome. And it's so relatable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like when you're in a relationship and it's gonna and it ends, someone was done way before the other one usually.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And sometimes you don't know that that's the case. You're not seeing it. You're too deep into the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's so real.
Yeah.
You know? Girls in Cars Like That Are Born to Run is one of my favorite lines.
That's awesome.
It's again, just something you hear and it just makes me smile. That was one of the songs or one of the moments from that song that made me want to play it on the radio when we had a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Even from Chickens, Boss Man's Got Me Hauling Chickens, She's Got Me Hauling Ass.
Yeah.
Like so fun.
Yeah.
So like a good moment from that song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That when you hear that line and then you hear the song, you're like, yep, makes sense. Yeah. You know?
And the production on that just matches it so perfectly.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Yep. It's, I ain't gonna be what sold out at a sold out show.
Yeah.
Like, that's a statement in my head.
Yeah, man.
Like a mission statement.
Yep.
Yeah. That, yep. That song's several years old. And we actually started writing that song. And I was like, it was one of those where it's like, do you guys mind writing, you know, something kind of like geared towards me this day, which I don't like that. I like writing whatever's in the room and if it can work or whatever, but I don't want to put chains on something. But it was just something that it was like, really, I wanted to do. And we didn't even have that hook. Like I was driving home from that ride. We were like, I don't even know how to land this. And then like, it just like, and it's just like, oh yeah. And then that became like, I did the demo at home and it just became like, I've had this song for, I don't even know. I think we wrote that in like 2018, 17, 18 or whatever. And I've just been sitting on that waiting for a record, you know?
Yeah.
That's
one of the things. And you hear like a guy like Stapleton, right? That wrote, I mean, he had other bands, but he wrote for so long before he put out Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's a collection of, it's like a greatest hits album out of the gate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like with songwriters, people that are songwriters professionally, you're writing songs all the time.
Right.
There's plenty of songs that you loved that someone might have got that cut, like like Man Made.
Right.
Love, you know, like songs like that. But then there's also songs that didn't fit anyone else, but doesn't mean that you loved them less.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe you forgot about them. Yeah. And then you come back to it and you're like, damn, this is still something I love, you know?
Well, there are a lot of songs. I think I've talked about this with a lot of other writer, artist people. It's like you have songs in your Dropbox that just have been there for years, but you kind of, when you like do that thing where you're like, yeah, I'm going to listen down to stuff that I've done, and you kind of go through your, you put yourself in demo jail, there's certain ones you always come back to, and I feel like that should tell you something, like, you know?
Yeah. So. If it means something to you, it's going to mean something to the audience.
Yeah.
That is a testament.
Over at Creative Nation, Barry Dean's office, I think it's Barry Dean's office, there's like a chandelier in the room, and it's got like all these like note card things with stuff written on them, just quotes. And one of them is from Steve Martin, and it says something like, people are buying tickets to hear your taste. And I think that is just so cool. It's like, if it turns you on, if it does something here in this giant world, there's 20,000 people at least that's going to do the same thing for it. You know what I mean? So...
It's so true.
This probably is a silly question, but tell me about the journey of what made you decide to put a record out. I mean, you have a lot of music out. Is there a culmination of things? And like, I know this is sort of like taking older songs that, like, you know, 40 good years have been out, but what made you want to put it all in a record?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to make a record, but it just felt like too daunting. Like, I, you know, as an indie artist and stuff, I try to break even. Like, I'm still trying to break even on things, you know? And so it just felt like this thing that just couldn't be done. And really what it came down to is, like, 2 years ago, it'll be 2 years in May, I had heart surgery. So I was born with a bad aorta valve, and which is one of the reasons why I got a later start. From a young age, they were like, you're not insurable. Like, you're going to have insurance. Before, like, the Affordable Care Act and everything, you couldn't, if you had a pre-existing condition, you couldn't get insurance, health insurance. And so they were like, you're going to have to get a degree or a job that has insurance and has good insurance, because this is going to cost you a lot of money for a long time. And And so that kind of steered me. It's like, it didn't matter what I wanted to do. I had to do what I had to do. Mm. And so anyway, you know, whatever. I went to school, got a degree, and I actually have a master's degree in speech language pathology.
Oh, cool.
Which I don't use anymore. I never wanted to do it. that heart surgery finally came around 2 years ago. And I just had, my faith is like the biggest thing for me. It's the most important thing to me. And in that time of recovery where there's just like, you couldn't do anything. Like I just had to rest and heal for several weeks after the surgery. And I just prayed a lot. I just spent a lot of quiet time and my Bible. And it just felt sort of like this nagging voice was like, you're going to make a record. You're going to make a record. And it was like this thing was like, I can't make a record. That's a lot of money. I can't do that or whatever. And then it was like the Kickstarter, the, you know, GoFundMe thing started coming to mind. And man, you have to make like a video, you know, for your pitch for your Kickstarter thing. I've probably made like 6 videos and like, just, I'm not a person that likes to accept help or ask for it, let alone, you know, ask for it. So I made these videos and I was just like, nope, and delete, and I wouldn't do it. And then like, this went on for a couple months maybe. And I made this, I had this video, I was going to post it, and I literally like was like getting ready to do it. And I was like, no. And I like kind of threw this grown man tantrum. Like my wife was like, you need to chill out, bro. And, and the next morning, I have a Wednesday morning prayer group, that I'm in, and this guy started giving this testimony, telling the story about basically the story was like he wouldn't let someone help him, and this guy finally grabbed him by the shirt and was like, why won't you let God work through people that want to help you? And it was just like, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And that night is when I posted that video. I was like, all right, I gotcha. And then yeah, it fully, you know, I chose Kickstarter because it's like you either get all the money or you don't, and I didn't want to half-ass this whole thing, you know. And so, yeah, it went, met my goal and above some. And that was kind of the thing that was like, all right, I can do this now. And,
yeah.
And it took a lot longer than I thought it would. It was the process, producing it yourself. And again, like I said, I would have something done and be like, I just don't believe it yet. And then I'd have to get away from it for like 2 or 3 weeks, not even listen to it, not even think about it, to come back to it. And 'cause a lot of times you're just kind of like fishing in the dark, you know, you're just like, I don't know why it doesn't hit me yet, but it doesn't. And so, just a lot of trial and error.
And it's not like you've produced a lot of full records before to know from experience necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, not really. My own stuff, you know, right. And the demo kind of world of stuff, mm-hmm. You know. But
full record's kind of a different beast, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. But it was awesome in the sense, too, if I had a budget. Now, you kind of, everything in the past in the studio that's not just like at home in my closet, you know, on Logic, but in the studio, everything's kind of been the demo process where you kind of have to like get as many songs as you can in this like a little bit of time. Right now I had a budget to like sit and surround myself with different amps and different guitars and pedals and like just try things and mm-hmm. see what turned me on, you know, and just go down the road and see what happened. And so it was awesome in that sense, you know, like even the guys that I work with, you guys know David Dorn. He's like a major session player. He's helped me with a lot of stuff. Like even he doesn't get to do enough of that stuff. And he's just like, this is awesome. This is how it should be. Like, you know, just being able to try things and see what happens. And so it was awesome in that sense. You know,
when does the record come out?
April 18th. Yep. Killing It comes out a week from today, Tuesday, next Tuesday. And then the full record drops the 18th of April. So
it's, I love it. I'm a fan though, you know, like I've been a fan for a while, but, I think it does a really good job of representing you as a songwriter. And it's cool to hear that you produced it yourself. I didn't know that, mm-hmm. but, 'cause sonically it's cool.
Thanks.
And there's multiple sounds on it, mm-hmm. but I think part of being a songwriter is that. Right, that you will mm-hmm. go in to a room and write what the room tells you, you know.
Oh yeah.
And as you talked about earlier, you know, picking a lane. I think your lane is, I'm a songwriter and I write all the lanes.
Yeah.
You know.
Or just yeah, don't put limits on it. Like it's yeah. just, yeah, I don't know. Music loses as a whole when people do that. It's mm-hmm. just like you get in rooms with people and. People that are much more successful than me at writing songs, I could probably stand to take some notes, but you get in some rooms and they're like, the business decisions of like, would someone say this? Who was this? Is this an accurate way to write it towards this pitch or blah, blah, blah. And you're kind of like writing the song based on what you think it's going to do afterwards. And it's like, that's, we're already defeating the whole thing. Like we're defeating the song by trying to write it based on that. I just can't, I don't know. I've done it. I just, it's just like made me not love this as much anymore. And I just don't want to not, I had a job for many years that I hated and I don't want to not like this one, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because it's work. I mean, it's it's your passion, but it's still work.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
it's art is a cool work, though. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is.
Yeah.
One thing that I play guitar. It's just Riff City, this record too.
Yeah.
So I was telling Nick, I'm like, this is like, I could tell you grew up playing rock. You know, like this the country record, but there's like so much rock influence.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Zeppelin. I go, well, they have, you know, the collection of like the coolest riffs ever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, even some of it, I was saying, like, maybe there's like some Jimmy Eat World in there or something. Or like, so, like, what did you listen to growing up guitar wise?
Yeah. Jimmy Page was definitely like top of it. David Gilmour from Floyd was another big influence. The Weezer riffs, you know?
Okay, that maybe not Jimmy Eat World, but maybe it's Weezer. Then. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And the Rage Against Machine. I mean, like, you know,
yeah, Tom
Morello's riffs are just sick. You know,
iconic, legendary.
Yeah, I listen to Audioslave stuff still, just because like Cochise on my workout playlist just fires me up, man.
Yeah, no,
it's
no,
just
dude.
Sick. But yeah, those rock riffs, those guitar riffs, it's a big part of my for my own songs. You know, my writing.
I think it's correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Going That Way, the third track? What's the name of the third track on the record?
Yeah, you're going to have to help me remember. Good Thing Going.
Good Thing Going. Yeah. It's like that cool open riff thing. I'm like, this sounds like a rock riff, you know?
Yeah. That I would say that's kind of like a Weezer-ish kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. So that perked my ear up, too. Because like Killing It's kind of like that drop D kind of country riffage thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that song is, I'm like, oh, okay. So now we're pulling from different things. It's like, I heard like the, like you said, church kind of vibe or whatever, but this is like, this tune was like, there's definitely some indie rock vibes going on.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I love a lot of rock stuff, but what I love about country, it's like, I understand what they're talking about more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I listen to Tool. I'm like, hell yeah. I love Tool. Wear the Grudge like a crown. I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about, you know? So, but it's like when country dudes do rock, then it's like, oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's a girl. Cool.
Yeah.
Got it. You know?
Yeah.
It's more relatable.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that makes country special to me is like, it's always been the lyric, man. Like people are like, oh, it doesn't sound like country. It's like, man, chill out. Like the music, musically, country has changed. The people you're saying are country now weren't in their day, you know, like Garth Brooks wasn't country enough. Yeah. Like,
literally.
But yeah,
people tell me that they're like, Garth ain't country. I'm like, what?
But what was always the thing was like the lyric, the craftsmanship of the lyrics, the writing, that's always been the thing. And when I see country kind of stray away from that, sometimes that's the part that breaks my heart a little bit about it. And it's like, that's the precious part, you know, but musically it's always been kind of here. I mean, think about how pop it was with like, Ronnie Millsap's top five for me, but saxophone solos and stuff, you know, it's like the urban cowboy kind of thing.
What are some of the songs from the record that either mean the most to you or you think are maybe like the best representation of you?
Well, like the ones we talked about, Killing It and Saw That Show, are definitely like very personal.
Yeah.
There's a song called How to Remember You on there. It's about my dad, and he's even on it, you know, from some of the home movies. But that song's out already. That one. And Four Good Years has always been special to me because that was one of the first times I was very aware in the writing room of like, guys, this one's mine. Like this isn't writing for someone else. Like this is country and 70s rock, like hybrid. And
Your Bob Seger.
Yeah.
That pedal point, G, yeah. C.
Yeah. Man, just 1/4. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that one always has a kind of special place, and they all do. I mean, they all do for some reason or another, and that's why they're on the record, you know? Yeah. Those are the ones that come to mind. I don't know. They all have their reason.
And so as far as plans for the record, like you said, your publisher is like, do you want to go shop the still labels? Is that, do you, are you like fully committing to doing the artist lane, or are you doing this as a passion project, or?
No, man, I'm all in. My chips have moved. I mean, you guys know how it is with the songwriting world. Kind of, it's hard. It's taking a hit. Like, yeah, it's sure. Hard. Publishers, I don't even know. Who knows what it's going to look like in 5 years, but I know it's getting harder to be a songwriter and feed your family. And so, I mean,
you've got everything you need, I think, to do the artist thing. It's like the talent and the songs and story. You know, you're cute, man. And you got everything, dude. Why not, man?
It's definitely where my heart is. My chips have been shifted. All my eggs are in that basket now, except for maybe a couple, just because, you know, I still have a publishing deal and I'm still fulfilling that. And I still do love writing songs. I mean, I really do love the craft and all that. It's time, man. It's time for me to step out from behind the curtain and kind of see if what I got matters, you know, enough to put some butts in some seats.
It's funny, like, we've met maybe once or twice before, you know, but... Yeah. Listening to especially the first and last song on this record, I'm like, okay, I feel like I know you a lot better now than I did before.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope people feel that way. You know what's funny is yesterday, so this Killing It song, it's a little edgy. Sold Out Show is edgier in terms of this, whatever. It's a little more direct, F you. But last night on TikTok and Instagram, I posted a video of me at the Bluebird kind of saying what a lot of people said. I don't know if you saw it, but I was basically saying like, the best 100 songs in Nashville, you just don't hear them. Like, you know, like everybody freaks out about them. Oh my gosh, you should hear this thing that Tom Douglas or Scooter Caruso wrote or whatever. And it's like, and then you're just like, songwriters who do this every day that are really good are listening to these songs. I mean, like, that is just stupid good. Mm-hmm. And then everybody freaks out about them, but they don't hardly ever get cut and they don't hardly ever make it to the radio, even more rare. Right. And I was just kind of saying that. And man, that has, these videos like has sparked a lot of, I'm kind of there to the point of like, I'm not trying to be like this. I don't want to sensationalize things and try to like cause drama and all that stuff, but I do firmly believe in the truth and being on the songwriter side for so long and saying like, look, you know, you write a song, it goes in an artist catalog and now people are coming to see that artist play that song and they're putting it on a shirt and they're buying that and it's streaming well and my life hasn't changed at all, you know? Or in some cases, and this has happened to me and it happens all the time, like you write the song, you demo it yourself, you make the track, and then you listen to the band and the producer basically just copy what you did and they get points and you don't get anything. Yeah. It's like, I'm just kind of over that thing. And I don't think people really realize how that is. And I'm just kind of like there. It's like, I don't know if my brand is just the truth, I guess, but like, I don't want to sugarcoat anything anymore. Like, it is what it is. And like, it doesn't have to fire you up or whatever. And I'm not trying to be shady, but at the same time, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. This is real. I think realness is what I'm after.
I definitely played on demos before and had come up with a Sig lick or something like on Steel or Electric or whatever. And then I hear the master like down the line, I'm like, very similar.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, dude, I mean, I'm not going to name names, but I like big writers in town who the producer will literally ask them for their tracks, on the demo, and they use those tracks and they don't get producer credit. And they're like, I don't want to rock the boat or what. It's like, dude, you helped produce that record, that you did that. And, and it's like, that's not right. That's just not, it's not illegal, but it's not right. And
well, and when publishing was enough money to where if you had some album cuts on a major label song and you were a 100,000-aire, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Realistically.
Yeah.
That was a different conversation.
Yeah.
You didn't have to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Because you were good.
Yeah.
Right? You were like, I'm good. I got my house.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm squared away. I'm going to keep writing more great songs. But times are changing. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that you're seeing is if a writer wrote a song, they should probably put out their own version of it. Right? Why not?
Absolutely.
You know, like even if it gets 1/100th of the streams that the artist that cut it got, that's still, that money's coming straight to you. You know?
Yeah, probably makes more still if you own the master. Probably.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That 100% or 80%, if someone's distributing it, of the master is going to make more money than your freaking writing credit on a big song, unless it's going to radio. Right?
Right.
That's
or ends up a commercial or something, I guess.
Yeah. If it's for sync, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's the interesting part. Is like, I feel like more songwriters should do that.
I agree, man. My buddies who have no that I write with all the time, Dan Wilson, Joseph Pat, like, they have no artist ambitions whatsoever. And I'm like, you all need, like, you have all these songs that are so good. Like, they're just sitting there dying in a Dropbox. Make a record, just like make an acoustic vocal record, like record one of our rounds and put it out, you know? And actually they're starting to do that. And it's like, you need it's to, smart. Man.
And honestly, like, it's a legacy thing too. You know, if that's on streaming, your grandkids can listen to that, you know, and be like, this was my grandpa.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, this was my grandpa that wrote this song. It's, this is my grandpa's voice.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good point.
The music lives forever. Hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, but that's one of the things too, is like, dude, Josh Phillips with his solo, right?
Yeah.
That went number one. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Great song.
Amazing. Yep.
Everyone was talking about that work tape before it became a song.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became a big bona fide platinum smash song.
And then he put his own version out.
Put his own version out.
As you should.
Right. Yeah. And in my head, why wouldn't you?
Right.
You know, some of my favorite albums, and I'm a nerd, but some of my favorite albums that I would go back and listen to over and over and over again are like those AIMP albums.
Oh, yeah.
That are like the demos of songs. Some of them are hit songs and some are like kind of middle grade songs, but awesome just to hear the demos of it.
Mm-hmm.
Shane McAnally has an album that's Spotify only that he has a lot of his hits on from, this is probably 12 years ago. And then also some songs that never got released, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And look at Eric Dylan's records. You're just such a massive fan of Eric Dylan.
Yeah. Eric, I mean, when Eric was doing the artist thing for a while, but I think if you ask him, he's not doing that anymore, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he would say.
He's not, but he's still putting out music.
Yeah.
Because it lives in his heart.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And getting to express it at a show is great.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about getting to release it.
Yeah.
It is like, in my head, it's the next level of thing.
Commitment.
Yep.
I think people probably, myself included, sometimes you get, you get more preoccupied with like what, but like the work that has to come after you put it out, like trying to make money at it or trying to, all that work, I think turns a lot of people off. Because it is, I mean, that's part of it. Yeah, this Kickstarter thing, I mean, most of the budget was for the, after the record was recorded, you know?
Like, for example,
What do you mean?
Like what are some stuff you've done after the record to help promote it? Like,
oh yeah, like just all the, okay, so we went into Ronnie's place, the studio, and I had an 8-piece band. We recorded, like, I'm going to release it, but it's rehearsal at Ronnie's is what we're calling it. It's basically brand practice, but I was like, let's film it. And so I paid a videographer to film and edit the stuff, and then we recorded it. So I paid a guy to, you know, mix it and everything. Mm-hmm. And then all these ads, you know, we're starting to ramp up ads and that costs a lot of money, you know? Yeah. And, you know, all those things, the content things you want
marketing.
Someone to, it's just, that's a lot of, it costs a lot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And to pay someone to take the, I mean, I don't want to, I have no capacity to learn how to now run test ads and do analytics. Like I'm doing too many things already that not well enough. I'm
writing strings.
Yeah. I'm my own booking agent. I'm my own everything. Yeah. And it's like, so you have to pay someone like that. And that ain't cheap, man. I mean, even the cheap ones are not. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah.
Well, and you get what you pay for oftentimes too.
Yeah.
You can find a diamond in the rough, but usually it's not a diamond.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, since I feel like I'm probably wrong, but we do have some folks in the industry that listen to the pod. What would your dream collaborator be as far as, you don't have to be like specifically, but like, are you looking to get a record deal or are you looking for booking or like?
Yeah, the record deal is really of no interest to me currently. Radio is not like something that I have ambitions for really. I really kind of like the idea of owning it all, doing it my way, and just connecting directly to the fans, taking out all the middle. Because that's what most of the music business is people who found a way to create a gate, you know? And so I just want to, I don't know what Spotify's rate is. Nobody does. But I know that if I sell a ticket, I know how much it costs, and I know how much I get, and how much my shirt costs, and how much I get.
Right.
So doing all that, but like, I would love to have, to not have booking. is the bane of my existence. I would love to not have to do that myself.
And we talked about you also, we talked about like your prayer group and like talking about asking for help and taking it, you know, it's like, it's oftentimes better to have, you know, most of something that does well than all of, you know, something that you're having to do everything. You can't really get it there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And when Cleto came on the podcast, he said, from Flatland, he was like, if you want to go fast, go by yourself. But if you want to go far, go with others.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I've heard that before. That's great. Yeah. Yeah.
Find, so just booking find agent people. Would be massive.
Massive. Yeah. Management. Just somebody else to kind of handle all these little details, you know. I watched some interview with some entrepreneur one time, and he was like, if I feel confident that someone can do whatever I'm doing to the, at least 70% of the ability that I can do it, I go ahead and let
give it to him.
Do it. And I think that's a good
marker. You can get bogged down in the micromanaging of stuff and want, you know, at some point you just have to accept 70% of the way is good. Now I can focus on writing the string parts or shredding this guitar solo or whatever.
I feel like less and less as an independent artist, as things go the way they are, like less and less of my time is spent on actual music anymore. And it's like, that crushes me. But like to be able to just to have that capacity to do that more often, man, like you just said, I mean, that's what that's what you should be doing, you know, but.
And that's the theory behind a label, right?
Yeah.
That's the theory.
It's theory.
You know?
Yeah.
Is, hey, artists should focus on art. And they should, really, in a perfect world.
Yeah.
It's just every time structure gets built, there's kinks in in the system, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's politics, religion, whether it's, you know, music government. Business.
Government.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's every time there's a gate, there's someone that wants you to pay to be at the gate to get through it. Right?
Yeah.
That's part of the thing.
All the contracts you sign and everything, that's like, they literally, the word is always exploitation, like exploitation of your creative whatever. It's like your creative property. It's like, that's the word they use. Like, it's, you know, trying to exploit.
I think now's a kind of a weird time in the music industry, but also exciting time because it's like through social media and all these different things, it's like you can sort of a la carte a record deal yourself in a way where it's like you could just, okay, I'll just grab this publicist for this release and do it this way. And I could work on my own ads and do this. And, you know, like, you, going to radio is so expensive. People don't realize that. So, you know, it's like if you're not wanting to go to radio, then boom, just there's a big part of the budget you just got back. Now that can go towards paying videographers and content.
Yeah, man.
I think we're seeing a shift of that, like people moving away from that model. But
I agree. I think content is more important than ever. Varying content. Having music that is great music.
I mean, come on, nobody loves that.
No, dude, nobody loves it. But it's, you got to show who you are.
Yeah.
Right. Like when someone's like, pick a lane. Part of that is because it's easier to say who you are if you're only doing one thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as the side effect of that is like you, the thing really isn't just have good songs anymore. It's how does this person feel emotionally connected to you?
Yeah. It's a branding story.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Nike's. I saw, I watch a lot of these things, and it was like Nike's guy, whoever was part of their marketing thing. He was like, we don't create commercials, we create stories. Like, we create mini stories. That's what people buy into, is a story.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's basically, that's what you're saying.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's super true.
But you have people for like 2 seconds when they're doing this with their phone. Yeah. So it's hard, you know?
Well, and dude, that's like visual hooks, right? Like, you hear that. You hear on screen text, you know, and it's always changing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if you put on screen text, they're like, we don't show it to anyone. Now they're like, oh no, it's good, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, is the needle's constantly moving in that world.
Yeah.
Right.
Dude, when I posted that video last night, another grown man tantrum, because when I was trying to post it to TikTok, it would like load 99% of the captions and then it would just freeze. And I tried over and over and I was like, now I got to sit here and like caption out all this by hand. And it was just making me so mad. And then I was like, and Facebook, I don't really, whatever, Facebook, but you do it. And whatever reason, like when I would caption it, it would turn my video horizontal all of a sudden. And it was like,
it's weird.
What? And I tried over and over and over. I was like, I should have been done with this 20 minutes ago, and I'm dealing with this stuff.
This is making my blood pressure.
No, dude. But it's just the what it is, you know. But you're
digital's
right.
Digital.
But it's, I would argue that the biggest predisposition for success as an artist now is your social media prowess. I mean, it's like kind of, and what I've been reading is seems pretty consistent across what I've read is like, they say like about 85% of people scroll social media with their phones with the mute on. They're not even hearing it. So it's like, come listen to my music that you're not listening to right now. Yeah. So it's visual.
Well, that's very much it. Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that we're trying to research too, because it's not just for artists, it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
How do, if I'm talking about a song that I love on a clip, or if we're talking on this podcast, what's going to make them stop?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If they see Kit Moore, they might stop. You know?
Yeah.
But like, what?
If they see Riley Green, they definitely will.
They definitely stop. Yeah.
I do too.
But yeah. But like, that's one of the things too, is like, the other thing that's crazy about Nashville is there's so many talented people.
Yeah.
There's so many. It's wild.
Mm-hmm.
We see kids, 20-year-olds, new ones every year, every 6 months. And you're just like, how are they this good?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That like, talent has to be there. You need that. That's the basis of it. Really? You know? Mm-hmm. But
ideally.
Yeah, ideally. Yeah. Yeah. But how do you amplify that? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about like what we do with events. We're pretty good at hosting events.
Mm-hmm.
We have good quality talent that comes through. We have a way that people can kind of get to express themselves. We have people that understand what we do and come to see it, because mm-hmm. they come to expect a certain thing from our events. But how do we take that and show it to people that didn't stumble into the bar or don't know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the same thing an artist is doing. And how do I get good quality content out of my events?
Yeah.
You know, like, we've been trying to do video stuff and it's just not the caliber where artists are going to share it. How do I get that content to come out of our events in a quality enough way that you'll be like, man, I want to share this on mine?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to figure out.
Same,
just for the
hobby.
Yeah, just for the artist, it's like your thing of how you're doing it. And like Kurt with lighting, I'm like, dude, I don't know shit about lighting. I just know if it looks good or if it doesn't, you know. But he's like, no, like, this is why you're drawn to this image, because there's depth in it, you know. And
that's powerful information. I don't get that stuff. Like,
well, our tour photographer taught me everything, so
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there like, you know, making pictures yesterday for content. And I'm like, with my iPhone, I'm like, all I know is that looks weird to me and I don't know why.
Well,
and it's
after the podcast, let's take a look together. I can give you some pointers maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Kurt's good at everything.
Thanks. Appreciate you, bud.
Of course. Yeah.
But I do like photography a lot.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's important.
And I like good riffs.
Yeah,
but tasty, you got some good riffs.
Tasty riffs.
Some riffage, dude.
Yeah. Do you have an album release show or anything?
Not really. I am playing Third and Lindsley May 29th.
Is it full band?
Full band, 7 or 8 of us. And
string section, flugelhorns?
No, no, just 6 xylophones. And I'm on lead bass. Yeah, it's just like your typical band thing with harmony singers. That girl that you hear that voice that goes ham on all my stuff, her name's Nicole Boggs. She's awesome. And she'll be there for sure. I don't know if I'm calling it I'm trying to figure out what it is still, what the show's gonna look like. It won't be like an album release per se, but it'll be rock, paper, scissors sort of influence. I think I'm gonna have some special guests that lean towards the rock, someone that's, I think, is really commercially good, someone who's going to rip your heart out with a song, you know, and try to
love that,
you know, just make it a theme kind of thing.
Oh yeah. What was the date of that again?
May 29th.
What was the location of the venue again?
Third and Lindsley.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Love that. I'll send you guys tickets if you want to come.
Yeah, that'd be sick, dude.
Hey.
Yeah.
May 29th at Third and Lindsley.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's man, I love the record.
Thank you.
Congrats.
I kind of knew. I would.
Thank you.
But just because I love most of the music you put out to date, right? All for different reasons, but all for the same reasons too. Because they're just well-crafted songs, man.
Thanks, man.
You know? And that's like, in a modern age where you think that would be more common than it is, it's not always. you know?
Yeah.
So
patience, I think, is the key. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
My favorite writers are the ones that are willing to sit, maybe spend all day just trying to figure out how to land the hook right before we even know what the song, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's just I was thinking about, like, how many people, good soup takes time is something I say a lot. It's like, who eats soup anymore? Nope. But, like, I bet my grandparents ate it, like, in stew and soup all the time, but that took all day to cook. Like, yeah. nobody's got time for that stuff anymore, you know? And,
yeah.
But it's valuable. And
it is.
Good stuff takes time. And, like you said, with the Stapleton stuff, it's like he'd been doing it for a while, and that record is amazing.
God tier.
Yeah, it's amazing, but he took his time getting there. You know? It wasn't a rushed thing.
No. And every record he has is great.
Yeah.
The Traveler.
Well, he also could just sing whatever. Yeah. I agree. Like,
well, they say you have your whole life to write your first record and then 2 years to write the second one.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So true, though.
But not him, because I think even off his second record is like 13-year-old songs and everything, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Venus Seagull, you probably know that. You know?
Yeah.
That's the other thing I talk to with young artists. I'm like, don't be in that big of a hurry.
Yeah.
Because you're writing for your whole career, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hopefully you'll get better songs down the line that beat these ones.
Yeah.
But you're never going to be in the same spot that you were. And the spot you're in means so much to you right now. Don't get lost in trying to put the cart before the horse.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'd rather be good than lucky, I think, you know. I don't know. I'm going to think about that a little more. Actually, now I say it out loud, but I played in Texas last weekend at Billy Bob's, and this guy that I played open for, I was talking to his music lawyer, and his music lawyer was like, I'm in long form negotiations right now with two acts. I think they're bands. He's like, neither one of them, they're getting ready to sign a record. He's like, neither one of them have played a show. He's like, and I think that the most they've written 3 or 4 songs. I was like, man, like, that's awesome. If I was them, I'd be jazzed, but also, like,
it's hard, man.
I don't know, man. There's so much value into, like, the grind and then the time. Like, you don't want to do it. You definitely don't. There's a song on the record called Everybody Wants, and it's kind of about that. It's like, everybody wants to have it made, but nobody wants to have to make it. And it, all that impatient time waiting for stuff, it's like, I don't want to do it. But once you get on the other side of it, it's like, man, I'm glad I did, you know? There's just so much value to that.
I think about that a lot with, like, just the shows we host, right? Like, you got to play to people not giving a fuck so that when 10 people give a fuck, it means the world to you. Mm-hmm. And then when 100 give a fuck, really means the world to you.
Dude, I mean, I'm still in the spot where I'm like, if I have 5 people singing my songs back to me, I'm like shocked, you know? But that day, like, that'll be like the end all be all for me. I don't, honestly, if I can sing to 200 people that are singing, like, they came, they know who I was before they walked in the door and they came on purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds like to me, like, all right, I'm good, you know?
You've got the songs and the talent, bro. It's going to happen. Just keep going.
I appreciate that.
That's the most important thing, is just got to keep going.
Yeah. The hard knocks, the doing your reps, the playing to nobody listening makes it so much sweeter when it is on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches you how to steer the crowd.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
If you know you got a song that if no one's shutting up, you can shut people up with it.
Yeah.
That's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Kids that never played a show don't understand that.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah.
They got to figure it out while they're in front of 1,500 people instead of 15 people.
Yeah. Man, that gives me so much anxiety just thinking about that, like trying to figure that out as it's happening. It's like, whew.
Yeah.
There's no precedent for that. You know, I can think of a few different artists. So they'll cut their teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, my mom would say baptism by fire kind of thing. You know?
Yeah. And that does happen. And you'll see people. One of the best parts about doing what we do with events is getting to watch people get better.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And now you're getting to see that on big stages, you know,
mm-hmm.
faster than you could. I mean, even like Luke, like when you saw Luke perform the first time, he didn't know how to work a crowd like he does now, right?
I would say he's gotten better, yes.
That's what I'm saying.
But the first time I played with him, I'm like, this guy's going to be a fucking mega superstar.
Right. The talent was there. Mm-hmm. The songs, honestly, like some of them were there too. You know what I mean? He had really good songs out of the gate. But you just get better dealing with the crowd. You know, you get better like knowing at this part you go and interact with these people.
It's about confidence. And
looking
stuff.
People in the eyes. You know, like making them feel the moment that you're feeling or that you're giving them.
Yeah.
You know? Those are the reps that really, like, in my head, make it make sense.
And the crowd will teach you a little bit, too. Of yes. Like, well, that's a moment. I didn't even sometimes you get surprised. Like, I didn't really think that was a special moment, but I guess it is. Yeah. You know? And so
let's lean into it a little more.
And then it'll make it special for you. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was listening to my record this morning as I woke up. Thanks. Because I've been in a real bad, like, headspace for the past few days. And this morning I woke up kind of like, felt like I was kind of had some reprieve from it. I was like, all right, I don't hate the world so much today. And I put it on and I didn't listen to like just a couple songs, but like they hit me in a way that they hadn't hit me before, which when you're like, sometimes it takes years to like hear a song. It's just like a listener that you've made. But like, I was able to hear one or two of them in a new way, you know? And, I forget where I was going with that, what we were talking about, but like, it kind of like helped me. Oh, we were talking about like the crowd teaching you and hearing something in a new way. Like it kind of gave me a new perspective of something, and now I have a different attitude towards those songs than I did prior. You know,
yeah.
You have to be in the right space sometimes for things to just hit you. And like you said, you got to show up. You got to be there.
Keep going, brother.
Present.
That's the thing too. And you want another one?
Do what?
I said you want another one. Yeah.
Oh no, that's a good. I'm good. Yeah. That is delicious, though. I mean.
We'll give you something for the road.
That tastes like a green tea you get from the gas station, just like an Arizona. Yeah, dude. That's good. That's dangerous.
Yeah, super dangerous.
But the thing is the things that mean the most to you in a song mean the most to them. The things that mean the most in a show to you are going to mean the most to them.
Right? Yeah. I think most of the time. I don't know. Is that always true?
Not I mean, always, but it's better hit rate than not in my head.
I think I heard someone say once, like, the trick is to play to 40,000 people like no one's there, you know? Yeah. It's like, that's actually sick. Like, you're back in you're 17, you're back in your bedroom, just, like, eyes closed. Like, it's music is anything, and it's like there's no fences, and it's like it's just you and the song and whatever you're playing, and, like, those are the magic moments. I think it, as a fan going to a concert, you can see artists, like, when they get in that zone, and it's like, that's the ones I remember, you know?
Yeah. Watch someone kind of, I say they're on a different plane of existence, I say, you know, like watch someone like feel what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for another observation that I've had and that I've kind of tried to strive for as far as playing live is like, well, the Bluebird is like my favorite place to play, as I said earlier. But the reason I think for that is because the Bluebird, when you go to a Bluebird show, it's like, oh, this happens here in this moment and this night, and then it doesn't happen ever again like that. And then you get to like bigger venues, and I've never been like a fan of like going to like Bridgestone. That's not something that I love, like sitting watching stuff on a Jumbotron and everything. I've just never been like that kind of a music fan. But like a 2,000 cap room where it's still kind of small enough, you know, like the Ryman or whatever. I think it's just so important as a fan for me to be in a concert and experience it as if this is a one-time event. Like it's not, there's no click track that everyone's playing to. There's no pyrotechnics that it's like, this is Des Moines got the same thing Albuquerque did and Chicago's getting it tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like this is a, and maybe sometimes it's not, maybe it is rehearsed, but it feels like it's like I was a part of something tonight. And that's what makes me buy the ticket the next time they come into town. You know?
Well, hopefully people will buy tickets to your shows and get that kind of a thing.
I hope so.
Yeah. And they're definitely buying tickets to go to Third and Lindsley May 29th. They're
coming out my dog. Get
their one-of-a-kind Brett Scirocchi album, maybe release party vibe.
Well, that's...
They're going to buy koozies.
I hope so.
In Nashville, we get to have more of those experiences, I feel like, even at the arena level.
Mm-hmm.
Than anybody else gets.
Oh yeah,
because special guests and
yeah,
if you're almost like weirded out at an arena show if there's no special guest. You know, it's one of those things. It's strange.
Right. Everyone's here. Why is no one? No one's just walking in. I go to Tootsie's and no one famous is there. That's weird.
Yeah. It's just an interesting thing. It's a blessing that we get to experience so many cool moments.
Yeah.
That's the best part about Music City for me, coming from just a guy that loves music, is there's so many times where you just watch someone take a crowd, or you watch something that will never happen again happen. You know, someone pop up on stage with someone and sing background vocals on something. Just everything, you know?
Yeah.
And writer's rounds, for me, if you're playing a song with someone that you wrote that song with, how often do you get to do that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or if they're, even if they're in the crowd and you're just like pointing them out and saying, I wrote this one with so-and-so and they're here hanging out tonight, you know, just those are one-time experiences, stuff that doesn't happen frequently. And in Music City, we have such a plethora of them that it almost seems like we don't pay as much attention as we should.
And a lot, but we're also living here, like we get the weekday shows and that's like everyone's in town, and like, so your buddies and like the artists that are buddies are like, they're here, so they can just do that. And it's like on the weekends, they're kind of probably out in the road in different states and stuff like that. So yeah, but most people who come into Nashville, it's a Friday through Sunday kind of thing, right? So yeah, we're spoiled in that sense. It's like the weekday shows are, that's the good stuff, man.
Yeah, like you're talking about the Bluebird.
Yeah.
And how people came there and they were like, I didn't know this existed.
Mm-hmm.
When we see people that on a Sunday, because it's the end of the weekend, sometimes they're leaving Monday, they'll catch it and they're like, how do you do this? I'm like, this is every week.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of talent and the amount of amazing moments that we get to see in this town is like nothing I ever thought I would experience.
And isn't it funny how it doesn't get old? Yeah. You know? I don't know. At least for me, it doesn't.
Your brain starts to like hurt sometimes from it, but then the moment happens.
Yeah.
Right back.
It's all the coming and going from it and all the to do around it, but like the moments, wow. They don't get old.
Those moments are priceless.
Mm-hmm.
They're why everyone does what they do,
mm-hmm.
you know, is for those moments, at least for me.
Yeah, same.
This album's full of those moments.
For you?
Yeah. Say again?
Was that the same for you?
Yes, I agree with everything that Nick said.
Ditto.
Yeah.
But this album's full of moments, man. It's full of lines that made me stop, go back, and listen to the line again.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a big compliment. Thank you for that.
Congrats. Like I said this a few times, but congrats on the album. And thanks for coming in, shooting the shit with us and telling us about it.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I mean, it's an honor to be sitting here, honestly. I've watched a lot of these. So.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate it.
We appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, man. You made me cry.
Yeah. Well, you made me cry last night when I listened to your music.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man.
We appreciate you, man, and we appreciate your craft.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm Nikki T.
I'm Kurt Ozon, and we'll see you in the front row. Thank you, Brett.
Lindsay.
Yeah.